Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Fractured Continent, Europe's Crises, and the Fate of the West, by William Drozdiak, narrated by Paul Bamer. Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. The darkness drops again, but now I know that 20 centuries of stony sleep were vexed to nightmare by a rocking cradle. And what rough beast, its hour come round at last, slouches toward Bethlehem to be born. William Butler Yeats, The Second Coming, 1919. Introduction. In capitals across Europe, the year 2016 earned its description as the continent's annus horribilis on many fronts. A surge of refugees from Syria's civil war threatened to overwhelm the continent. A succession of terrorist attacks by young Muslim militants pledging allegiance to the Islamic State raised security alerts to the highest levels. Russia pursued a spate of aggressive actions against the West by expanding its military presence in the Middle East and launching fierce bombing raids on behalf of the Assad government in Syria, escalating its preparations for potential conflict with the Baltic states, and waging a barrage of cyber attacks that disrupted the American presidential election. An economic recession for much of Europe stretched into its 6th year of abysmal growth and fewer jobs. In June, Britain shocked its continental partners by deciding to leave the European Union after 43 years. And in November, the election of Donald Trump as America's 45th president alarmed European allies who feared he might renege on American security commitments and fan the flames of populist nationalism in their own countries. The prospect of even greater instability looms on the horizon. Voters in the Netherlands braced for the possibility that Geert Wilders, the leader of the xenophobic far-right Freedom Party, might become the country's next prime minister. Italy could face early elections that might usher into power the anarchic five-star movement, which seeks to destroy the country's existing political and economic power structure. In France, the right-wing National Front, headed by Marine Le Pen, one of Europe's most prominent populist nationalists, moved closer to achieving its goal of winning the presidency and putting its radical legislative agenda of anti-immigrant and anti-European policies into effect. Just a quarter century after the liberal international order of open markets, free speech, and democratic elections had triumphed over the forces of communism, the Western democracies now seem in danger of collapsing as a backlash against globalization arouses angry opponents of immigration, free trade, and cultural tolerance. In an echo of the 1930s, the world economic flow of trade and investment is weakening, and political demagoguery is growing. As income inequality divides rich and poor more than ever before, democracies are becoming susceptible to xenophobic and autocratic tendencies by leaders who are tempted to play the nationalist card. The concept for this book grew out of my experiences as a journalist covering the exhilarating days when the forces of freedom had vanquished totalitarianism in what seemed like a climactic battle between good and evil. When thousands of East Germans, among them the future Chancellor, Angela Merkel, streamed across the crumbling Berlin Wall a generation ago to breathe the fresh air of freedom in the West for the first time, I was struck by their shell-shocked expressions of wonder as they moved past the glittering consumer showcases on the Kurfürstendamm promenade. On that fateful day in November 1989, I had just arrived in Berlin after an exhausting flight from Thailand, where I had been touring Asia as the foreign editor of the Washington Post. My boss, the legendary executive editor Ben Bradley, was characteristically blunt when he woke me in my Bangkok hotel room with a phone call at 3 in the morning. "They're tearing down the wall," Bradley said in his raspy voice. "Get your ass to Berlin." Once I finally arrived in Germany and saw the hordes of day trippers walking across the Berlin Divide from the communist east, I knew from past encounters where their materialistic curiosity would lead them. To the KDW, Kaufhaus des Westens, or Store of the West, Shopping Emporium. As I watched them stroll through aisles where gourmet delicacies were stacked as high as the ceiling, their sense of amazement turned to rage and frustration. They railed against their communist leaders as liars who kept them enslaved with a false narrative that Western affluence was a myth. As they trudged back to their drab apartments, past the mine-strewn buffer zone, tank traps, and concrete barriers that divided East and West Berlin, I became convinced it was a day that assured the collapse of Soviet-style communism, as well as the victory of free-market democracy. Within a month, Chancellor Helmut Kohl laid out a roadmap that would merge the two Germanies. Soon, other communist regimes were toppled as democratic movements from Prague to Moscow swept them from power. Without a shot being fired, the Cold War had ended, and the Western model of democratic elections, free speech, and open markets was extolled as a model for the rest of the world that would usher in a new age of enlightenment. At last, Europe seemed close to achieving its elusive goal of being whole and free. The West's two key institutions, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization and the European Union, embarked on a phase of expansion to embrace the new democracies in Central and Eastern Europe. Besides merging former communist states into Western institutions, Chancellor Kohl and France's President François Mitterrand insisted that the quest to build a United States of Europe would require other measures to deepen integration and bring Europeans closer together. They pushed through the Maastricht Treaty in 1992 that would culminate in the single European currency, the euro, so that people would not have to cash in their liras, francs, and Deutschmarks when traveling to different countries. 3 years later, European leaders agreed to abolish national frontiers by signing the Schengen Agreement, so travelers would be able to move freely in a borderless continent. These three initiatives, the expansion of NATO and the European Union toward Russia, the creation of the euro currency, and passport-free travel within Europe, were supposed to lay the foundations for a great leap forward toward the goal of a united, prosperous, and peaceful Europe that inspired Jean Monnet, Robert Schuman, and other visionaries amid the ruins left by World War II. In the heady days after German reunification and the collapse of communism a quarter century ago, there was almost universal support for such measures, as the campaign for a united Europe seemed to acquire unstoppable momentum. Indeed, the basic tenets of Western democracy, including free elections, free speech, and free markets, seemed to have won the hearts and minds of people all over the world. So much so that Francis Fukuyama declared in his book, The End of History, that the great ideological struggles of the past were over now that Western values had captivated the world. For Europe, the prospect of leaving behind centuries of nationalism, bloodshed, and destruction in favor of a cohesive continent whose postmodern ethos would forever banish thoughts of warfare between nation-states seemed to herald a new golden age. Europe would become, in the eyes of the world, the avatar of a noble experiment to pool national sovereignty and develop new and effective forms of supranational governance. Other continents, including Africa, South America, and parts of Asia, started to consider whether their states could band together into regional trade blocs and eventually follow Europe's example in striving for ever closer political and economic union. It seemed almost inevitable that a united Europe would evolve into the next global superpower, one that could capitalize on its influence as the world's biggest commercial bloc and most affluent market, and in the process, become the envy of emerging powers such as China and India. But along the way to this Kantian paradise, the European project seemed to fall off the rails. A grandiose scheme to draw up a constitution for Europe that would codify Western democratic values for the entire continent became bogged down in internecine squabbles and muddled bureaucracy. After years of arduous negotiations, the project was scrapped in 2006 after being rejected by voters in referendums held in France and the Netherlands. Soon thereafter, the three great initiatives that were designed to bring Europe closer together would start to unravel in ways that would cause deep fissures across the continent. Today, the dream of European unity has begun to wither away, and the future stability of the continent is clouded with uncertainty. Some of Europe's greatest accomplishments now seem in jeopardy. The eastward expansion in 2004 that embedded former communist nations inside NATO and the European Union has triggered hostility with a revanchist and aggressive Russia. Moscow fears the West is seeking to encircle their country and blunt its aspirations to regain superpower status. Russia's seizure of Crimea and its support for separatist rebels in eastern Ukraine has compelled the West to impose economic sanctions. It has also damaged Germany's strategic objective of energy and economic independence with Moscow that Berlin once viewed as a pillar of Europe's post-Cold War security. The single European currency, known as the euro, has come under fire because of rigid austerity policies designed to reduce enormous debts of Greece, Spain, Portugal, and Italy, owed in large part to Germany and other northern creditors. Even though the financial crisis in early 2015 that nearly forced Greece to drop out of the 19-nation eurozone has eased, many experts fear it is only a matter of time before the north-south split in the eurozone leads to another existential crisis for the entire Union. In the absence of further steps toward integration, such as common fiscal and banking policies, the agonizing complexity of orchestrating a single monetary policy with 19 different national economies may turn out, in the long term, to be impossible to sustain. The open borders assured by the Schengen Agreement, now linking 26 countries, are today disrupted by barbed wire fences that have been erected in Hungary and elsewhere to block the flow of refugees streaming out of Syria and Libya. What was intended as a vivid demonstration of European ideals being integrated into the everyday lives of people across the continent has become a distressing symbol of nationalist rivalries, fanned by fears about the impact of the refugee crisis. Nearly 1 million refugees, four times as many as the previous year, poured into Germany during 2015, fleeing wars and poverty in Africa and the Middle East. Although Chancellor Merkel still defends her open-door policy as necessary to uphold European ideals about human rights, her political popularity at home has been hurt badly. Nevertheless, she remains Europe's most respected leader, and friends and allies, including President Barack Obama, persuaded her to run for a fourth term as Chancellor in Germany's national elections in 2017. But the refugee crisis will continue to haunt Merkel, Germany, and Europe for years to come. When dozens of male asylum seekers were charged with molesting and robbing young women on New Year's Eve, 2016, near the central train station in Cologne, popular sentiment swung so sharply against unchecked immigration that Merkel was compelled to accept some border controls. The once popular agreement to establish passport-free travel across Europe seemed dead. This perfect storm of troubles, Russia's new aggression, the Greek debt confrontation, a massive refugee crisis, and the prospect that Britain will withdraw from the European Union, has been compounded by a wave of terrorist attacks that has spread a pervasive mood of fear across the continent. A series of massacres carried out by sympathizers of the Islamic State killed well over 100 people in France. An airport attack in Brussels using suitcase bombs cost more than 24 lives. When a Tunisian immigrant plowed a truck through Berlin's Christmas markets in December 2016, Merkel and other European leaders appeared ineffectual in their efforts to protect their citizens. The growing atmosphere of insecurity has sapped voter confidence in mainstream government leaders and fortified the xenophobic agenda of far-right populist parties in France, Hungary, the Netherlands, and Poland. It has also sowed deep distrust between Christians and Muslims, in particular the second and third generations of Arab immigrants from North Africa who migrated to Europe seeking temporary employment and then stayed far longer than anyone anticipated. The waning appeal of a united Europe has much to do with a stagnant economy and the disillusionment of young people. Economic anxiety is magnified by fears about the impact of cheap migrant labor, even from fellow EU member states, as seen by Britain's determination to prevent Polish migrant workers from gaining their fair share of wages and benefits. The immigration threat mobilized a majority of British voters to abandon membership in the European Union and retreat into their island nation. Growing disaffection with Europe has become particularly acute among young people, who in the past embraced a borderless Europe. Continental millennials once fancied themselves as the easy jet generation that felt comfortable spending weekends crashing on sofas of friends in foreign cities, living abroad and studying in foreign universities, and learning to communicate in several languages. Now, the difficulty of finding sustainable jobs has caused many young Europeans to postpone marriage and having children, losing faith in a Europe where they risk becoming a lost generation with no career or family prospects, even as they approach middle age. The 2008 financial crisis exacted a huge toll in public support for Europe, as unemployment among young people soared as high as 50% in Spain and other parts of the Mediterranean periphery. The appeal of Euroscepticism and the anti-immigrant parties across Europe grew as mainstream political leaders failed to find effective remedies to the crisis of jobs and lack of economic growth. The failure to integrate alienated young Muslims, many of them second and third generation European citizens, living without hope in suburban ghettos, has impelled some of them to embrace radical jihadism, like the perpetrators of deadly terrorist attacks in Madrid, London, Brussels, Paris, Nice, and Berlin. Today, the dream of European unity has begun to wither, and the future stability of the continent is clouded with uncertainty. Given the abiding clashes of culture, language, and history affecting EU member states, perhaps it was always a fantasy to believe that such a disparate continent could be unified. Yet, many of the global challenges facing Europe today can be solved only with the pooling of resources and surrender of national sovereignty that has helped the continent deal with other crises in the modern era. For the United States, a divided and weaker Europe poses a grave risk to its global leadership. The Atlantic Alliance has been adrift for much of the post-Cold War era. Europe and the United States have lacked a cohesion and common purpose that united them before the disintegration of the Soviet Empire. Many Europeans already had grave misgivings about following America's lead in fighting wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. When Barack Obama declared his desire to pivot toward Asia early in his presidency, European governments felt he was turning his back on 7 decades of transatlantic partnership that left them feeling neglected, if not abandoned. Even though Obama remained popular in Europe throughout his 8 years in office, he could never dispel the belief among some allies that his frequent calls for Europe to assume greater responsibility for its own security was simply a coded message that America was seeking to cut its ties to the old world. Obama's passivity toward the Syrian civil war compounded those anxieties when Europe was left alone to deal with threats of instability caused by the refugee surge out of the Middle East and North Africa. Donald Trump's election has raised even more serious questions in Europe about the reliability of American commitments. In a sharp break with his 12 predecessors, Trump has declared that NATO may be obsolete and the European Union should be treated more as an economic rival. Despite much talk about the growing importance of Asia, the United States still depends on a vital partnership with Europe to maintain its dominant role in the world. Even with the rise of China, India, and other emerging powers, trade and investment between the United States and Europe still accounts for nearly half of all global economic activity. Shared democratic values and NATO military commitments still make the Atlantic Alliance one of the most crucial foundations of global stability. The devastation caused by 2 world wars in the previous century should be sufficient warning to all concerned about the consequences of Europe falling apart. Fractured Continent seeks to illustrate the myriad crises faced on many fronts by a divided Europe. In Germany, the most powerful and prosperous country in Europe, where job vacancies are still plentiful, there is growing concern that the country's vaunted stability may be at risk because of the influx of more than 1 million refugees, mostly from Syria. In France, the alienation of Europe's largest Muslim population has fueled the rise of radical jihadism, discredited the mainstream establishment parties, and tempted voters to turn to the far-right National Front. In Britain, disenchantment with Europe is so strong that the country defied its own economic interests and voted to leave the European Union. In Brussels, the capital of Europe, where NATO and the European Union are headquartered, the rapid expansion of both institutions to more than 2 dozen members has spread confusion and disarray about the direction of future policies and how these unwieldy supranational bureaucracies should execute decisions taken by Europe's leaders. In Spain, a protracted economic crisis has disillusioned young people and damaged public confidence in centrist political leaders. Spain's troubles are compounded by the rising challenge of regional independence movements in Catalonia and the Basque country. Italy now looms as Europe's next economic crisis, with its banking system on the brink of collapse. In Poland, voters have turned toward the hard right, choosing to be governed by a populist nationalist party that disdains Europe, even though the country has greatly benefited from its EU membership over the past 2 decades. Denmark, regarded as the world's happiest country, is now consumed with anxiety about the future of its generous welfare state and by the threat of inundation as sea levels rise with the melting of the glacial ice sheet in Greenland. In Latvia, where ethnic Russians now make up half of all residents in the capital, Vladimir Putin's vow to defend their interests has stirred worries about an invasion by Moscow. And in Greece, where years of austerity measures imposed by outside creditors have devastated the economy and spread immense hardship, tens of thousands of Syrian refugees with nowhere else to go have overwhelmed the country's ability to care for them. Fractured Continent aims to provide insights into the painful and disturbing challenges facing Europe today and the root causes of political turmoil, economic insecurity, and social volatility across the continent. Europe's ability to deal with its multitude of current crises will have an enormous impact on the United States and the rest of the world. The Atlantic Alliance remains the cornerstone of American security commitments. How we cope with Russia, Turkey, Iran, the broader Middle East, and other trouble spots around the world will depend to a large extent on cooperation and support from our European allies. Indeed, the fate of this fractured continent could determine the future survival of Western democracy in the face of ascendant authoritarian models around the world. Chapter 1. Berlin, the new epicenter of power. On the morning of September 4, 2015, German Chancellor Angela Merkel awoke to a human disaster unfolding at the Keleti train station in Budapest, Hungary. In her dreams, she was still haunted by pictures of a Syrian Kurdish boy whose corpse had washed up on the shores of a Turkish beach resort just days earlier. Now, thousands of Syrian refugees were moving north from Greece and pouring into the Hungarian capital, with tens of thousands more on the way. More than 3,000 refugees were already stranded at the station, where conditions were becoming rapidly intolerable. They would not be allowed to continue their sojourn until Hungarian authorities received assurances that Austria and Germany would accept them. Merkel contacted her Austrian counterpart, Werner Faymann, and insisted that they needed to make an urgent declaration, saying their frontiers would remain open and that the refugees would be welcome. After receiving the green light from Merkel, Hungarian police finally allowed the vast horde of Syrian refugees fleeing civil war to continue their northward journey to find safe haven in affluent Western countries like Germany and Sweden. Merkel did not reach that fateful decision without grave misgivings. She is renowned for her habit of playing for time, postponing critical decisions until she has carefully reviewed all potential consequences. Germans have even transformed her name into a verb, to Merkel, meaning to procrastinate until the time is ripe for making a decision. But on this occasion, Merkel decided to move boldly, even recklessly, to defuse what she viewed as a moral and humanitarian crisis that threatened to overwhelm Europe. As she returned from her annual hiking holiday in the Alps, she saw that the trickle of Syrian refugees in the spring had turned into a late summer flood. By late August, as many as 2,000 a day were traversing the narrow isthmus between Turkey and the Greek island of Lesbos. She feared this tsunami of migrants heading into Europe could soon destabilize the entire continent. She also believed the exodus had become a personal and not just political test of her character. A few days earlier, a van crossing into Austria was unlocked by authorities, only to find more than 70 corpses, mostly women and children, who had been trying to reach Germany. In July, Merkel became emotionally distraught during a poignant encounter with a young Palestinian girl named Rim. The girl broke into tears as she pleaded with Merkel to grant her family asylum before they would have to be deported. Merkel touched her shoulder and tried to console her, but to no avail. Merkel said nothing further could be done and lamented that Germany could not afford to care for everybody who left the Middle East. Then, during a visit weeks later to a refugee hostel in the eastern town of Heidenau, in Saxony, Merkel was assaulted verbally by an angry crowd. As Merkel returned to her car, a hysterical woman shouted, "You miserable cunt! You stupid slut! You traitor!" as others voiced their fury with her decision to allow in the refugees. Merkel would later recall that she had never experienced such visceral hostility from fellow Germans. But
sample complete. Ready to continue?